This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always great to be here. Thanks for having me, Greg.
Well, the big political story of the week, as it usually is in late January, early February, is the president's State of the Union message. The president had a pretty rough week politically, from Scott Brown's win in Massachusetts to the Supreme Court decision on campaign financing, and we'll definitely get to that in a moment. But first of all, a lot of people thought his job was to reconnect with the independents and the middle class and make them once again believe he's on their side. Did he?
No, not at all. Quite honestly, the president spoke for more than an hour. He said some things that were blatantly untrue, notably that the overwhelming evidence in science says that global warming does exist or climate change does exist, and that is not true. There's an equal amount of disagreement. But more than that, I thought that he got into too many diverse areas, ranging from health care to campaign finance to foreign policy at the very end, to focus on a single message. One thing is very clear. He is going to stay focused on health care and try not to start from scratch, as many Republicans and people in his own party want to do, but to get some kind of package cobbled together from the House and Senate versions.
John, from what we're hearing, and this could obviously change, is that at some level, reconciliation will be necessary, most likely, if the House finally agrees to pass the Senate bill, and then that on the precondition that there would be a follow-up bill for so-called changes to make the House Democrats happy. If that is the case, if that's what the road they go down, using reconciliation and passing a bill that it's pretty clear right now the American people don't like, what's the political ramification?
Well, I think that's very obvious. And I note with interest, no one rules out reconciliation on a health care bill. If that is the case, to ride roughshod over the rules of the Senate that were designed to protect the minority and have simply an up or down vote on something, as you say, the public does not want, and I would say they will pay a price in terms of Democratic loss of House and Senate seats that will exceed that of 1994, when President Bill Clinton tried to get a health care bill through and it failed. Imagine what will happen if they try to short-circuit the process, pass something that's unpopular. They'll pay a very big price.
John, the president also talked about the bitter partisanship here in Washington. He talked about Republicans having to be more than the party of no, Democrats having huge majorities and not running away from tough issues. Kind of made himself seem like the only person who was willing to work with both sides of the aisle here in Washington. How credible was he?
Well, maybe the other party would not be the party of no if the president sat down and was the president of Let's Talk. He seemed to indicate he was going to do that when he attends the Republican retreat in Baltimore this Friday. So we will see just how conciliatory and convivial he really is.
John, another interesting, perhaps odd moment last night was towards the end of the speech when he referred very directly to last week's Supreme Court decision that you and I talked about a little bit last week. And that's changing the rules on campaign financing and removing a lot of restrictions that have been placed for quite some time. He basically said that this was a wrong decision by the Supreme Court, and now we're seeing slow motion footage of Justice Alito saying not true in his reaction as he sat just feet away from the president last night. Your thoughts on the president taking that tack?
Justice Alito had every right not only to yell, "You lie," but to throw a shoe at him. Quite honestly, presidents in the past have disagreed with the Supreme Court. Most notably, George W. Bush made it clear through his spokesman that he did not agree with the court's decision on eminent domain in his final years as president, but he did not publicly denounce the court or certainly do so with any of the justices present. Dwight Eisenhower said after the Brown versus Topeka Board of Education decision in 1953 that it doesn't matter whether a president agrees or disagrees with a decision, he's there to enforce the law and carry it out. And this was a major departure from that precedent of polite disagreement from a distance with the justices. I thought it was totally uncalled for.
John, we talked a little bit ago, if the Democrats persist in passing the current version of health care reform, they could pay a mighty price at the polls in November. We possibly saw a little bit of that this week when Joe Biden, the vice president, his son Beau deciding to run for re-election as Delaware Attorney General rather than seek his father's old Senate seat. Marion Barry, the congressman, not the former D.C. mayor, deciding not to run for re-election in Arkansas. What do you make of those? Is the fact that Biden's son is not getting in a telltale sign that this is a bad year for Democrats?
Well, again, the late Tip O'Neill said all politics is local. The whole mechanism that Vice President Biden had set up, that is, the appointment of his longtime friend and right-hand man, Ted Kaufman, as stopgap senator until 2010, when young Beau was finished with his military service in Iraq and ready to run, really looked as though he was trying to have the process wired, packed, rigged, and stacked. Polls show Beau Biden trailing Congressman Mike Castle, a moderate Republican and former governor of the state. In the end, I think that Beau Biden saw it would be very difficult to be shoehorned into his father's seat, and he chose the better part of valor. Along with the retirement of Byron Dorgan in North Dakota and his likely succession by Governor John Hovind, the Delaware results point to at least a gain of two more seats for Republicans from their present 41-seat Senate ranks.
A lot of people have been encouraging Mike Pence, the number three House Republican, to challenge Evan Bayh. Ultimately, he decided not to do that, saying he wanted to work completely on getting Republicans back in control of the House. Others say he might have 2012 ambitions. What do you think?
Well, I had lunch with Mike Pence just this week, and he explained his decision, something he and his family talked long and hard about. A Rasmussen poll showed him defeating Senator Evan Bayh, who has taken some real brickbats for his vote in favor of the Obama health care plan and in favor of stimulus packages. Mike Pence is an articulate congressman, a popular fixture on Sunday talk shows, but as he said, we decided that I should finish the job I started, which is to get a Republican majority and work with it for constructive solutions. Now, in so doing, he did not rule out a race for the governorship in 2012, when Republican Mitch Daniels has to step down by law after two terms. So he may be someone we see in another office. For now, I think he would love to serve in the majority, and he fully believes that Republicans will win a majority in the House this fall.
John, a busy week. We'll talk again next week.
Looking forward to it as I come back from the Republican retreat and see how the president is treated and he treats his hosts. I'm John Gizzi.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.